Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. We are a nation on the move. Planes, trains, and automobiles. We have come a long way since the horse and buggy, the trolley, and the paddle wheeler. But where are we going and how? We face many challenges, especially with regard to infrastructure, the high cost of gasoline, and both the desire and need to clean the air. The East-West Gateway Council of Governments is kicking off a series of discussions on transportation and transportation needs tomorrow evening. I'll have more on that a little bit later. I'm Don Marsh. Joining me in studio to look into our transportation future, Shay Schindler is long-range transportation planner for the East-West Gateway Council of Governments. Sean Light is vice president of the local transportation and engineering firm, CBB. He's also an adjunct professor at Washington University's School of Engineering and Applied Science. Brad Reinhardt is with Giltner's St. Louis and is an expert on moving freight. He is chairman of the Transportation Club of St. Louis. And thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you. And an important subject, obviously. I'm going to put the same question to each of you to start. And Shay, I'll start with you. What do you see as the biggest challenges to our transportation future?
Yeah, well, you guys are actually hearing a lot about this right now. I would say funding. So at all levels of government, federal, local, state, we're all facing this issue of how are we going to fund our future transportation system. A lot of states around the country have kind of grappled with different options. We hear a lot in Missouri about the sales tax coming up. You can also look at charging people based on use or toll roads. So I think it's really going to be interesting as we head into the future how we all decide to actually fund ourselves.
Sean, how about you?
Yeah, one of the things I think we need to look forward to moving ahead is actually working all this together as a system. 100 years ago, the steamboat lobby really lobbied against the Eads Bridge being built, and that's a facility that's still in use and a great asset to the region today. And as we built the system since then, we've put in different components of it. So right now, we're working really hard to try to get the roads and the transit and the biking and the walking all to work together. One of the things East-West Gateway is doing is looking at this great streets concept, which looks at our roads and tries to make them walkable and bikeable and friendly to transit, as well as very drivable. So getting the various components of the system to work together, starting in the 90s, we did that through the ICE-T federal legislation of trying to create intermodal freight transportation, trying to link up the trucks and the railroads and the barges a lot better. So I think moving forward and trying to create a complete, comprehensive system that all works together is one of our biggest needs that we have. And we've come a long way, but we still got a long ways to go.
And Brad Reinhardt, how about from your perspective?
I think regionally, the biggest concern going forward is attracting manufacturing into St. Louis. That and also getting truck drivers actually into the industry and people driving the truck. So I think if we improve our infrastructure, I think that will definitely go a long way for improving manufacturing, which will then get the whole transportation ball rolling.
Shay, we're in pretty bad shape here in Missouri, are we not? And probably worse off than many states.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Yeah. We actually, how we fund transportation now is mostly through the gas tax, the state gas tax, which hasn't actually been raised in over two decades, not even to offset inflation. So every single year as we move forward, the value of those dollars is really going down. And we're also seeing now that people are driving less and they're driving more fuel efficient cars. So really we're bringing in a lot less revenue than we have in the past to fund our transportation system. Also here in Missouri, we're kind of limited. All those gas tax dollars can only go to roads and bridges. So as Sean was saying, in the future, we're really going to have to rethink how we kind of incorporate a whole transportation system together.
Well, what sort of possibilities do we have for coordinating all of this, Sean?
Right. So one of the big things that we're seeing on a nationwide level, and again, we're seeing it here locally, is rethinking on the urban street system and how we design and we operate those streets. So an example of this is the great streets we talked about. Another example is this bus rapid transit, an initiative that Metro is trying to look at, which has a light rail type service, but it has a more of a bus system kind of a cost. But it really integrates in with the communities a lot more. So if we want to have walkable communities that people can take transit, Metrolink's great, but there's not a whole lot of neighborhoods that it reaches into. So something like bus rapid transit would be able to reach further into those neighborhoods. And it's just a whole lot the way that we think about our transportation system. So Shay is right. With the gas tax that we have currently, that only funds roads and bridges. We have a sales tax in the region that pays for trails through Great Rivers Greenway. We have a sales tax largely pays for Metro. But over time, we've kind of developed a culture where we develop these individual components separately, and we've been trying to tie them together. And it's really time that we look at this entire system for what it is, a transportation system, and figure out the best way to operate and to expand and to build and to maintain this as a transportation system and look at what the needs are for a system overall.
Not everyone may be familiar with the Great Streets program. Explain what that is.
Right. So in 2006, East-West Gateway launched what they call a Great Streets program, very visionary at the time and kind of a nation model to some extent. And what the thought was, we looked at Del Mar Boulevard and we looked at the Loop and said, you know, it's not the best place for to try to get a car through there if you're going on a through trip, but it's a great place. It's a really neat place to be. And it does well for bikes, it does well for pedestrians, there's transit service there. So how can we create more places like the Loop? And in a recent example, one that's open is South Grand again. And South Grand is an area that has had a lot of economic revitalization occur in that neighborhood. You go down there now, it's gorgeous. It's a very walkable, pleasant place to be. If you want to ride, live down there and ride your bike to places, you can get there. And it's got incredible transit services. And it handles the car volumes, which is obviously something that's not going away. So it handles all those components together, which is a really big deal. Another example is America Central Port. So we've got talking about for some freight operations. And they've done some incredible things over with used to be the Tri-City Port District, now America Central Port, to combine rail and barge traffic and truck traffic into one system to really make St. Louis an important freight logistical hub for the Midwest, for the nation, really.
Brad, we don't hear too much about barge traffic. We're all aware of it and we see it, but when it comes time to talk about transportation and infrastructure, we don't hear much about that, and yet there are some great needs along the river.
Yeah, I mean, St. Louis is, I think it's the second largest inland port in the nation. So there is a lot of products, a lot of tonnage that's moved up and down the river. I think the reason you don't see much about it is because it's just a barge floating up and down the river and it's not stuck in front of you in traffic or cutting you off, or you're not sitting behind, you know, a train or something like that. So, I mean, there's definitely issues there and there's definitely places to grow it. I know, going back to America Central Port, there, you know, currently building a port to actually start bringing containers up the Mississippi River and to unload them instead of them putting them on the rail. So there is progress being made in the barge systems.
But the ports along the way all have to be upgraded, do they not?
Well, they do, and that's part of the problem. There's not a barge right now that can handle, because of the depths of the river, the amount of containers onto a barge that it makes it economically feasible.
Am I off base, or have I heard somewhere along the line that there is more cargo, freight, moved by barge in this country than there are by trucks? Is that...
That's true. Because you can do... Boy, I'm gonna get the number wrong, but it's like 200 truckloads per barge or something like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of freight that's moved.
That's really
on.
Incredible. It's so much more important than we might think, just watching them cruise up and down the river. Shay, back to you. When we think about here in Missouri, we think about the problems that this area faces. One of the first things that comes to mind, we mentioned roads and bridges, but our bridges are in awful shape, and I think that's where we rank very, very high in terms of negative aspect of our bridges.
And that's actually a problem faced around the country. I think it's about 1 in 4 bridges is rated structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. And so what that means is those bridges aren't necessarily going to fall down, but they need some work and they need some maintenance. And so as MoDOT talks about this sales tax as we move forward, you know, we kind of ask them, if you don't get more funding, what's going to happen? And they're predicting by 2017 they'll actually have to start shutting down some bridges because they won't be safe for public use.
Well, we all remember what happened in Minneapolis. They fall down, and they have been known to do that. What are some of the other ancillary issues that come from these problems? I'm thinking, you know, climate change is an issue, and our air quality is an issue, and these are all things that are directly related to transportation. Sean, what are some of them as you see it?
You know, one of the big challenges that we face, and we face for a really long time, and a lot of people appreciate it, is transportation safety. So one of the things that's really important to the region is to have safe, well-maintained roads. You know, I have 3 children, 5, 8, and 10, and in the next 10 years, they're all going to be learning how to drive. I'd like them to be able to drive on well-maintained roads without potholes and that kind of thing. And in Missouri, we lose 800 lives a year on our road system, and that's just way too many. I met a man named Sean Archibald a couple years back at a transportation conference, who lost his teenage daughter Kayla in a car wreck down in Jefferson County. And you can't talk to Sean for more than 5 minutes without getting emotionally welled up. I mean, it's such a tragic loss. She made a young driver's error on a bad curve and ran into a bus and lost her life. And we lose, you know, you think about 800 lives a year. That's three a day in the state of Missouri. That's about one a day in the St. Louis region. And trying to correct some of those areas and to try to, and we've come a long way with safety with a lot of our laws. In a lot of better transportation systems, but to keep pounding on that, to keep making those roads safer is a really important thing that we need to do.
You say all of our young people, the 3- and 4-year-olds, are going to be learning how to drive in just a few years, or maybe not. Young people right. apparently today are eschewing driving.
Mm-hmm. Well, we look at people want transportation choice, and that gets back to the initial comments I made about having a complete connected transportation system. And people want to have choices in how they travel. Now, having said that, 90% of or more of the travel in the state of Missouri is via automobile. So automobile is very important. We go back and look through the ages. Before automobile, we still had personal transportation. People were on horses and carriages and buggies and all those things. So that idea that we need to be able to get ourselves around to those different places important. So even folks that they want to take the bus or they want to be able to walk, they're for the most part still getting a driver's license and they're making some trips via car. So the ability for them to make those trips via car that need to be made via car is important. And it really comes down to choice of people being able to make the choice of, boy, I'd like to make this trip via transit or I'd like to walk or bike there or I need to get there via car. But for people to have those choices are very important.
Shay, Sean, you mentioned bikes. Shay, I see an awful lot of young people on bikes today. That's really changed.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, as a population, we're driving less, but especially the millennials. You know, you're really seeing that young people are attracted to cities and want to move to cities that offer choice, just like Sean said. So even if you're not necessarily a zero-car household, you're maybe a person like me who would just like to have the option to take the bus to work. So that's really, I think, you know, we're talking about long-range planning and what we want our region's transportation future to look like. And I really think we need to start thinking about, you know, what the younger generations are looking for and how we really can create a more modally balanced system that offers people alternatives.
All right. Brad, I want to turn to you on one issue regarding safety, because we've been hearing a lot lately about what truck drivers may be required to do with regard to rest. Apparently, there is a big issue in this area. Are you familiar with that, and what is going on?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of new DOT, Department of Transportation, laws that have come out that have restricted the amount of hours that a over-the-road truck driver can drive per day. And it's kind of a double-edged sword, of course, like anything else. I mean, everybody wants the roads to be safe and have the drivers well-rested and everything, but taking the hours that a driver can actually work away has had the effect of the price of all of everything basically has gone up in the economy. Since they can drive less miles, their trucking companies are charging more to get everything from point A to point B.
And it's very important to the drivers as individuals to stay on the road and cover as many miles as they can.
Yes.
That's the way they get paid for the most part.
Yep.
We're talking about transportation in our area and transportation needs in general. My guests in studio are Shay Schindler, long-range transportation planner for the East-West Gateway Council of Governments. Sean Light is with us, vice president of the local transportation and engineering firm, CB&B. Brad Reinhardt is with us. He chairs the Transportation Club of St. Louis. We'll come back and continue the conversation. We'd like to bring you into it. How do you see or want to see the future of transportation in our area? We'd love to hear from you. We have a couple of calls already. We'll get to those calls when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Shay Schindler, Sean Light, and Brad Reinhardt. Shay, before I go to the phones, just tell us what East-West Gateway is up to with regard to these series of conversations you're having. What is the objective? What are you looking for?
Sure. So East-West Gateway is the federally designated metropolitan planning organization for the region. And what that means is federally we're required to come up with a long-range plan that kind of sets forth priorities and a vision for how the region wants to invest in transportation over the next 3 decades. So right now we're working on the update of that long-range plan. Obviously, public input is vital to our process. You know, we really rely on what our stakeholders, the users of transportation in St. Louis, how they envision the future of transportation. So we decided to try something a little new this time around. So we're going to host a series of events in partnership with the Missouri History Museum and St. Louis 250. And we'll be talking about 4 major issues that the St. Louis region faces. We're bringing in speakers like Sean and Brad. And then at the end, we're going to ask the audience some questions so they can kind of weigh in on what they think about these issues. And then we can use that feedback then to help us shape this plan.
But you know, what you're going to hear and what you've already said is the fact that funding is required to do a lot of the things you want to do. You can't squeeze blood from a rock. I mean, the state of Missouri can't even give income tax refunds. Mm-hmm. That's how bad things are. I mean, what leverage does anybody have to create funds out of nothing?
Well, actually, this plan may actually kind of be new for us all. Usually we have a list of projects, you know, so a lot of people don't realize, but the new Mississippi River Bridge that just opened actually was in the works for several decades. Sure. So what the plan does, it kind of sets out a list of what are our next major projects over the next 30 years. This time that list might be very short. We're kind of waiting to see what guidance we're receiving on the federal level and also from the state of Missouri for what we estimate our revenue streams will be. But yeah, ultimately it may have an impact on how we grow in the future.
Sean Light, what would you like to see on that list?
Oh, on the long-range transportation plan, a balanced system. So there's a number of projects. There's a list out right now related to the tax that's out there, but that covers a number of projects that we need in the region. But I think there's a lot of people that would like to see additional MetroLink expansions on the list. And basically, a lot of that list is maintaining roadways that are out there. So back in 2008, 2009, we redid I-64 or 40. That was a major project, but it wasn't an expansion or it wasn't building a new road. It was kind of like redoing your kitchen in your house that people do once in a while. They get it out and update it with new appliances. We have roads like 270 North County that need the same treatment, where those roads are, those bridges and the pavement needs to be replaced, and a lot of the interchanges need to be modernized. So it's a matter of updating a lot of the bad bridges that we have in the region, modernizing a lot of the infrastructure that we have that needs to be modernized, as well as some expansions. And again, I think MetroLink is one that a lot of people would like to see.
And before I go to the phones, Brad, what would you like to see as a priority on those lists?
I think adding the lanes to Highway 70 between St. Louis and Kansas City, making that highway safer. And even if it's just doing truck lanes that's been proposed, I think that would help the movement of freight and trucks safely back and forth. And, of course, Highway 55 also between here and Memphis could use a little love.
Is there a dollar figure out there for what we really need, how much we need to get the basic stuff done?
Well, I can give you an example that might answer the question. So we collected as part of the sales tax process, East-West Gateway was tasked with coming up with a list of projects that if the tax passed, this is what we would fund. So we were estimated to receive a little over $1 billion for the region from the sales tax. And when we collected a list of all the wants and needs, it totaled up to be $8 billion. So you can see there's quite a disconnect between what we want and then what we think we may be able to afford, and that's if the tax passes. So there's a lot of needs out there.
There's no question about that. Well, let's go to the phones, and while we're talking about this part of it, we'll bring Betty in, calling from St. Louis. She has an idea that is often discussed, so let's have her express it. Go ahead, Betty.
Good morning. I wanted to ask, Missouri being located in the middle of the country, why is it that Missouri taxpayers are being asked to put the burden of updating our roads and our bridges not only with the federal resources, but also upon the Missouri taxpayer with our sales tax increase that is being touted? What is preventing us from having toll roads in the state of Missouri? Heaven knows when we go east or when we go south, we have toll roads. Why can't we utilize the toll road and let more people absorb the burden of the updating of our bridges and our roads other than the Missouri taxpayer? Thank you very much.
All right, Betty, thank you for the call. Who wants to take that on? Sean, you?
Sure. So the interstate system was created, 50, 60 years ago, really to provide interstate travel and interstate commerce, and had a military component, too, across the country. So it's really developed for interstate travel. The only state in the country that has an interstate freeway that is not interstate is Hawaii, by the way, and that was put in for some military needs. Having said that, you know, Brad had mentioned that we are the second largest inland port in the country, and we're the third largest rail hub. Kansas City is the second largest rail hub. In addition to that, St. Louis sits on I-70, 64, 44, and 55. We're in a very strategic location. Being in a strategic location on our nation's logistical chain provides us some great advantages economically. So if you look around the region, almost every major hospital is located adjacent to an interstate. You look at our major businesses like GM out in Wentzville. You look at Boeing, and I'm trying to think of the healthcare one up on 170. It's slipping me right now. But for the most part, being in a strategic location on the interstate system also provides us tremendous advantages for economic development and jobs. So while there is a lot of freight that goes through the state, we benefit tremendously by being in a position that there is a lot of freight that comes through the state on our rails, on the barges, and on the rivers. And it really helps us create jobs and grow the economy for Missouri. So at the same time we might have to pay to improve I-70, we're reaping a tremendous benefit from that. And it's a much better benefit than the cost that we put out for that.
But what about toll roads?
Right. So as I understand this, as part of the development of the tax proposals, there was a lot of due diligence done, and Missourians were asked what type of taxes they would support. And as I understand, tolls polled around 20 or 30% of Missourians said that they would support tolls on I-70. Missourians do not like to pay tolls. They don't want to do it. So from a matter of practical reality, putting tolls on 70 just isn't going to fly politically, and it's just not going to happen at this point in time.
Any other thoughts about that, Shay?
Yeah, Betty, I think that's a great question, and it's one that many people share. I think our lawmakers, when they were preparing this last year, they thought that a sales tax would be the most palatable thing for voters. As I mentioned earlier, though, there are lots of options. Maybe up in Oregon or Washington, they're playing around with something called a VMT tax, which would tax people based on the amount of mileage they drove. Obviously, you see toll roads around the country. So I'm interested to see, as we move forward, whether the tax passes or not, if we're really, kind of revisit some of these other options. And, I really think that once MoDOT has to start shutting down bridges and once the people of the state really start to feel the effects of a lack of funding, then we may be more interested in talking about tolls or some other option in the future.
Brad, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, tolls I think are very, discouraging for new companies and stuff to come into your region to the fact that, it's very expensive for a truck to, especially like out east to where there's a lot of tolls to go on, whether it's New York or anything like that. A truck can spend hundreds of dollars going through tolls just to get to a receiver or a shipper out on the East Coast. And they're already, everybody pays a fuel tax. If you gas up in Missouri, you're paying a fuel tax that gets into Missouri. So if you're driving on our highways already or stopping at a QT or a fuel station, when you're coming through our state, you're already paying back for paying for on those roads. So I don't think tolls are necessarily just have somebody else pay the bill for your roads when they're doing it anyway. And more times than not, it's going to be Missourians running through those tolls anyway. So, I just don't think there's a huge benefit for it.
I grew up in New Jersey, and if there's any state where there are plenty of toll booths, that's the one they threw away in the Garden State Parkway. And people don't like paying anything above and beyond what they feel they should, but everyone seemed to get used to it, and it just became another fact of life, just like paying an additional tax on anything that you purchase. So, but I certainly understand what people's objections to that. But you can get used to some things, and we're going to have to find some money, Shay, right? Someplace along the line. Speaking of money, we'll bring in Gwen calling from St. Louis. Gwen, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you. They did not mention the fact that a new tax is not required. MoDOT already receives more money than you would expect from the size of a state, about $64 million a year. The problem is that it is overbuilt. It has more than about double the miles that you would expect for the size of the state in their responsibility, and most states don't operate that way. MoDOT spends most of the money where people don't travel. They spend 78% of the travels on interstate, but they spend more than 60% of their maintenance funds in rural minor roads. we are misdirected and misguided in this state, greatly misdirected and misguided. More money is not needed. Better leadership is needed.
Gwen, thank you so much for the call. So Gwen contends that more money is not needed.
Well, and I think, you know, one thing that a lot of people don't understand, and I forget what year, when one of the Missouri gas tax initiatives that was passed, what was done by the state legislature at the time is MoDOT actually took over the state-county highway system, all the lettered routes. So in most states, the state in Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska, the state runs the numbered routes, the state highway system. Well, MoDOT actually runs the rural lettered route system. And it's important for people to recognize that out in outstate Missouri, it's not a waste of money to put money on those roads. We go up to the Macon area on a very regular basis. And I'll tell you what, those roads are important for their farm-to-market roads. They're important for the rural economy. They're important for our agricultural community and for that part of the economy. And that agricultural, you know, that stuff's really important here. That's where Monsanto is founded, right? Monsanto was here because we're in an agricultural region. So we are largely an agricultural region. We're an agricultural community, and providing good transportation to those roads is important. And I'll tell you that some of the roads that we travel on, the state roads, are not in pristine shape. They're beat up pretty bad, and it's fine because the volumes are low, but you can't let those roads go altogether either. So the fact of the matter is, by 2017, MoDOT is predicting that they won't have enough money coming in to maintain the road system in the condition that it's at. So by 2017, they're going to have to start letting some things go, and the road system will start to deteriorate. And at that point, we start talking about closing bridges, real impacts on traveler safety, impacts on the economy, and the goods to market type issues. So no, there is more money that's needed in roads, and it's not misdirected by sharing that money. In the St. Louis region, we get about a third of the pot, which is quite a bit, but there are needs in those rural areas as well because it drives the greater economy for Missouri and for the St. Louis region.
Shay, you want to comment on Gwen's comments?
Sure, and I think Gwen has a fair point. You know, if you look at Missouri and compare it to other states, MoDOT does operate more rural roads than the average. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think that MoDOT, a lot of people forget, but a couple of years ago, MoDOT actually went through a gigantic streamlining process. They downsized their staff significantly. They downsized their operations significantly. And this was all because, you know, several years ago, they were already looking at 2017 and predicting that this was going to come. And so really, internally, they took a hard look at how we do things, and they streamlined their operations so they could kind of deal with what they had. And so they're kind of coming to us now, hey, we've done everything we can internally. Now we need some more funding. And I think just the fact that you see this problem on the national scale, at the federal level, you see it, every state government across the country is talking about these issues. So it's really not just a Missouri thing. It's really a national problem that we're all facing.
Red, it's a national problem. But if you look at the political situation in Washington, where decisions would have to be made about federal dollars coming in, it's hard to be optimistic that there's ever going to be an accommodation to meet the need.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is a definite disconnect between, you know, the federal government and then what, you know, the states are asking for, and then, you know, a trickle down from that on, you know, what the citizens need on, you know, in the transportation logistics industry. I think it's easy for, not easy, but the federal government seems to either make a decision on whether it's safety rules or what money it's going to be spent and how they're going to spend it. But the trickle down, I don't think there's a realization on how it affects the actual business owner or the person that's actually, you know, needing that product or needing that job.
There seems to be a realization that something has to be done, and there's an awful lot of talk about the bridges and roads all over the country. It just, Sean, doesn't get done.
Right. Well, we're facing, and we've been facing this since the Great Recession started, really, as far as a discussion about how we fund our roads, from the Eisenhower administration through, and I forget the year, but sometime before the recession started, we had a federal transportation bill every 6 years, and we haven't had one since then. So we're really struggling with this question. And the other area gets to the gas tax. Back in the 50s, when we started the interstate program, the gas tax made a lot of sense. We had big cars that were using a lot of gas. We had the mileage was going up and up. We were building out the system, and it did a great job with that. The problem is that we have been pushing, for very good reasons, for more fuel-efficient cars, for more modes of transportation, and basically to use less gasoline. And we've been very successful at that. And when you're very successful at that, what that means is that the gas tax becomes a dwindling resource. Less and less fuel tax money is coming into the system over time. And it's a problem that we've known about for 10 or 15 years. There's lots of people that have been having lots of discussions about it. We've talked about the vehicle miles traveled tax that we put a GPS unit in your car and it reports into the state about how many miles you drove, and they send you a bill for it, right? And there's some people have some objections about that. So at the end of the day, we do need to find money to fund transportation. It's a vital component of what we provide to the businesses and the people in the state and all across the country. And I think as a nation, we haven't really come to grips with what the best solution for that is right now.
Well, that's part of what you'll be talking about, Shay, during your four conversations coming up. I have to take another break. We'll do that now. We're talking about transportation, the transportation needs, and the transportation future here in the St. Louis region. My guests in studio, Shay Schindler, is the long-range transportation planner for the East-West Gateway Council of Governments, Sean Light, vice president of the local transportation and engineering firm CB&B, and Brad Reinhardt chairs the Transportation Club of St. Louis. Back to continue our conversation and bring you into it. We can take more calls. A couple of lines are open. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, that is, or if you prefer, send us a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back. We continue the conversation on transportation and transportation needs and our transportation future. I have a number of emails and tweets here. I'm just going to read through them very quickly, and at the end of it, you guys can respond as you feel the need to. Lawrence writes, subsidized light rail everywhere with big public artwork projects in stations. This is what would you like to see in the future of transportation? Andy writes, comprehensive public transit. I can't wait for the day when I don't have to choose between a 20-minute drive versus an hour bus trip. Hillary writes, not one paid before by regressive sales taxes. Again, talking about the future of transportation. Suze writes, more bikes, more pedestrians, more transit. Rachel writes, more public transit, fewer highways. Most of these focus on public transportation. Mm-hmm. Surprised, Jay?
Not at all. For several years now, what the big feedback we've been receiving from the public is that we want more public transit. Not only transit, but they want more options. They want more bicycle facilities, more pedestrian facilities. You know, we have an aging population, so starting to think about how our elderly citizens will get around, you know, and that also includes expanding paratransit opportunities. So I think that we're kind of at an exciting time of transportation. You know, the public is demanding more options, specifically more transit, and I think we're kind of facing a bit of a conflict because that's not the way things have always been done. You know, typically transportation funding has been mostly about highways and bridges. So now we're really starting to think about, okay, how do we incorporate all these other modes and how do we fund them fairly and in a balanced way?
We haven't really talked about rail transportation, and obviously a lot of people and freight moved by rail. What about high-speed rail? I mean, we were having this system between Chicago and St. Louis. I'm not quite sure how that's working out, quite frankly. Haven't heard much about it lately. Where are we with all of that?
Yeah, so with the service between St. Louis and Chicago, that's still under construction, so that's not done yet. It's going to be higher speed rail. It won't be true high speed rail. High speed rail is very expensive. You have to grade separate in a lot of other things. But in other areas of the country, but more specifically other areas of the world, we can take a big lesson from that. If you go to Europe, the high speed rail system there is tremendous. China's building out an incredible high speed rail. I've got a gentleman that works with me from China, and he tells me that it used to be a 2 or 3 day drive to his town from the airport in China, and now it's a 10-hour train ride, and it's faster to take the train than it is to try to fly. So in a lot of areas, rail service is surpassing, it is at least equal, if not surpassing, some of the air service. So it's a big investment that could be made in the United States and could really be a game changer in how we travel in the future.
Shay, I expect you'll be hearing a lot about that again during your conversations. Anything to add to that, Brad? Back to the phones. We're bringing Harvey calling from Chesterfield because he brings up an issue, I think, that sometimes things that are old are new again. So let's hear what he has to say. Harvey, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, somewhat going the other direction. I'm concerned about the idea of putting fixed track trolley cars in the area of the Del Mar Loop. While I think that area has been developed very nicely, I'm concerned that additional bicycle traffic, additional pedestrians, and of course there's a lot of alcohol in that area because there's a lot of student activities, that those really won't mix well with traffic trying to make their way around fixed track trolley cars. I wanted to get your opinion of instead using flexible track trolleys, which basically would be buses. Also, I'm concerned about the fixed track trolley doesn't have the ability to change routes as the businesses in that area expand or contract, and the footprint of the desirable areas to have access to change. How do you go about changing all those tracks? So I'd like to get your opinion on that.
A lot of good points. Would you start it, Shay?
Yeah, I'll take a stab at that. I know that, so what Sean mentioned earlier is that in the region we've kind of started to, you know, it's not really typical that we look at streets in terms of whose needs they serve. You know, historically how we've gone about roadway design is thinking, how do we get cars through the street as quickly and efficiently as possible? And as Sean mentioned, you know, the Del Mar Loop is kind of an exception to that. So what, as a region, we're really trying to do, and you probably heard that St. Louis County just adopted their own complete streets ordinance, and at East West Gateway we have great streets, is to really think about, you know, in the future as we go forward and we're designing these roads, not only are we thinking about the needs of cars, but we're also thinking about the needs of pedestrians who need to walk, the needs of business owners who need people to access their businesses, the needs of bicyclists. And I know when they were planning Loop Trolley, they did a very thorough alternatives analysis, and, you know, this is the option that they landed on, you know, just taking into consideration the needs of all the people and all the businesses in that corridor.
Well, they're talking about streetcar now down Lindell into downtown, which is, if Harvey is correct, that's just going to exacerbate the problems he's concerned about.
Well, one of the parts of the conversation I think we need to remember, too, is, and I'm a transportation engineer, so engineers tend to think of streets as very utilitarian, right? So we try to look at the utility that we're going to get out of the street and looking at the needs of those users. But at the same time, a Del Mar loop, the street is part of the landscape. It's part of the business district. It's part of the action that's going on down there. And in reality, people are okay with buses, and we've tried to wrap our trolleys in Forest Park and downtown and make the buses look a little different. People really like these fixed rail routes. They really like the character that it brings, and they get excited when they see that. I mean, my kids will go down to the Transportation Museum just to ride those trolleys because it's a really cool, neat thing to do. And having a fixed route trolley in something like Del Mar Loop makes sense because it provides that character into the street to that area that a bus just simply wouldn't do.
And it's also a permanent investment, you know, so the business owners see that and then they be maybe more encouraged to invest in themselves because they see that the public infrastructure is being strengthened, and it kind of strengthens the whole community.
I want to bring in another caller here, if I can. Dan is joining us, I hope. Dan, are you there? Dan?
Hello?
Yeah, Dan,
yes,
go ahead,
hello.
Please.
Great show. There needs to be plenty more conversation about this topic. I saw construction business in the St. Louis area and have been doing so for about 14 years. And I think that people don't realize how many jobs this creates, the work in the infrastructure, and there needs to be more discussion about it. If you want the roads to get better, there has to be a tax, whether it's a gas tax, this tax they're trying to get passed, or whether it's toll roads. The roads aren't going to build themselves. To go back to Gwen's comment, $64 million in the state of Missouri is absolutely nothing. That may be one project to get done. And you're finding how many jobs it creates because I've watched it shrink. I've watched companies go out of business since 2007, 2008, 2009. I've watched companies leave St. Louis and go to work in other states, Indiana and Illinois, where the work is being bid and the work is being let. Also, I'll take this comment off the air when I ask this question. They have not talked much about federal funding and how Missouri has to match the federal dollars that come through. I'd like to let people know a little more about that. If someone could comment on that, please.
Who would like to do that?
Well, I know that's a big concern. You know, when we were working with our counties and developing these project lists, you know, one of their biggest concerns is matching federal dollars. It's different depending on the mode of transportation, what that match is. But in order to leverage federal money, it's not a 100% check. You know, our localities and our counties have to actually match those dollars. So part of the sales tax list of projects and list of needs was how to leverage those matching funds to really take advantage of potential future federal dollars.
And the point about creation of jobs is really an important one, and it maybe doesn't get as much attention, Sean, as it should. I mean, some of the politicians in Washington recognize this as a way, infrastructure improvements as a way out of the current employment or unemployment situation.
Yeah, and what we've seen, it's been kind of interesting. So we've been struggling with this state sales tax or the state funding issue as well as the federal funding issue since the recession started. And what we've seen in the area is a bunch of Band-Aid approaches that have come out of Washington that have the ERA money, the stimulus money, and a lot of these other things, which have actually funded a bunch of the projects that we've been building over the last few years as we've been seeing these shortfalls. So what I think a lot of Missourians and a lot of folks in the region might not understand is that although there's been a lot of construction actually happening over the past couple years, that's about to stop, and it's about to stop really quickly as these stimulus and these other Band-Aid approaches out of Washington kind of dry up and we're kind of left to fend on our own.
We have a couple of emails here that I'd like to get to. Alderman Scott Ogilvy of St. Louis writes, "It's pretty amazing to see how strongly and clearly people want better transit, safer bike and pedestrian routes, and how much they are ignored. Well, to take that one step further, if people are for it, then perhaps they wouldn't mind spending a little bit more on in their taxes, gasoline taxes or otherwise." Brad?
Yeah, I agree. It seems like, you know, when you get into these discussions about toll roads and everything like that, it seems like everybody just is really concerned about their drive back and forth to work and, you know, what's happening right around in your community, you know, with the comments of, well, the rural roads were spending too much. Well, those people in the rural areas, you know, they care about it. So, that, you know, there's a saying in, you know, the transportation industry that if you bought it, a truck brought it. Mm-hmm. So, and what that basically does is just, it's a reminder for people that, you know, transportation gives you everything that you have, own, build, everything. So if you don't have the roads or the infrastructure in your community to provide for manufacturers and trucking companies and the railroad and the barge people, if you don't take care of those infrastructures, it's going to dry up around you, and the cost for you to buy anything is going to skyrocket.
Well, I don't think Kara, who has tweeted, will necessarily agree with you. She says, "Should we tax everyone but the truckers who do the most damage to our roads? No to unfair taxes."
Yeah, well, I know in the trucking industry, it's taxed very high. So from the license plates that truck lines have to get in different states, the fuel taxes they have to pay at every state that they travel through. So I think if you would talk to the trucking companies, they are well taxed. So,
Sean.
Yeah, and I guess another thing to kind of help answer that, the original question is, you know, we are seeing a demand nationwide and in the region here for other modes of transportation. And I think a lot of people might not recognize because it happens relatively slowly. We've made tremendous strides in this region towards that. So an example of this, in 2000, we passed a sales tax for parks and trails. That founded the Great Rivers Greenway District, who's building a tremendous trail system throughout this region based on sales tax dollars. East-West Gateway launched the Great Streets Project program in 2006, which has resulted in South Grand and some of these other projects. In 2011, we adopted a great bike STL plan, or a regional bike plan for on-street bike facilities region-wide. That's going to take a little while to build out. It's going to take a lot of money to build it out, but that's something that's underway and it's being looked at very, very closely. The city has a complete streets ordinance, which means when they redo the streets, they have to look at all the users. In the county, St. Louis County just adopted it this year. So there's a lot of baby steps that we've been taking. I think the momentum is accelerating in that direction. And what it really takes, again, is changing the culture. Rather than have a car group and a truck group and a bike group and a transit group, that we have one We need to be unified. We need to get away from this special interest mindset that we've had for so long, going all the way back to the steamboats and the railroads that we were talking about with Eads Bridge, and have one collective mindset towards a comprehensive transportation system in this region. That's the direction we need to go.
You know, I'd like to take a moment or two. You talk about the steamboats, and I mentioned paddle boats and all the rest of it early on. I'd like to look into the future just a little bit here, because you guys are all in the transportation field here. Alrighty, are solar highways in our future? I've been hearing a lot about that lately. Jay,
Sean and I actually have joked about solar highways. There's a viral video going around talking about the wonders of solar highways, and they do seem neat. But you know, if you're listening to this whole conversation, we can't even afford to take care of what we have. So the idea of installing solar panels all over all of our pavement is just it's out of reach in my mind for now.
Well, you do hear a lot about it. I've also heard that the people pushing that video are scam artists.
Oh, really?
So they want to be in on the ground floor, yeah. But it will work. What about this pneumatic tube travel that I've been hearing about in California? It's just like you send money through the bank parking lot. You send it through this tube. Air pushes it through. They're doing this in Oakland, California.
Sure. So there's different technologies called people movers. I'm not familiar with what the system is in California you're talking about, but I know in Miami they have a system, and that system has a automated, they call it people mover. It's a little mini train that doesn't have a driver, and you just go up to a platform, you jump on, and you go to your next place. We can afford a system like that, it's great. So when we were in Miami, we were able to get around on that people mover system without having to worry about renting a car. So it provides another choice for travelers, which is what people are calling for.
All right, how about Google driverless cars, Brad?
Well, I think a lot of people would like Google driverless trucks. And if the federal government has their way, there won't be any more drivers left. So we'll probably need the Google drivers.
Yeah, and I can hit that. I actually did my graduate research on back in the 90s called the automated highway system. At the time, that technology seemed unreachable, and I thought, you know, I'm spending a lot of time doing research on this, and I'll never see it. But it's coming. It's actually, we're starting to see the initial components of it. Google ran a test out in California. They had vehicles that had steering wheels, and they had a driver to catch the vehicle if there was going to be an error. But that's been running since 2009, and they just completed that. They're actually about to run their next prototype with a series of about 100 cars that won't have steering wheels or accelerators. So they're very close to having this technology out there. We're starting to see the initial components of this with cars that you see that have automatic braking systems. It's in the trucks now. So if you go and you buy a new Volvo truck, that truck will not allow you to run into a brick wall. There's some cars that are coming out with that technology, and we're probably about 10, 15 years before you'll be able to buy a car that will be able to drive itself where you want it to go.
We may laugh at some of these things, but they're certainly possible. Just think of life without a cell phone 20 years ago and what's happened since. Just a minute or two left. I'll start with you, Shay, very quickly. What next? What's next for us in the transportation world?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a theme we've brought up several times today, and it's really finding the right balance. So you can see there's a lot of competing interests in this region, whether it's the freight industry or people commuting to work or transit advocates, bicycle advocates. Everybody has wants and needs. And like Brad brought up, a lot of times it's about what's best for them. And so really our challenge is going to be figuring out how to balance all those needs and also taking into consideration the way our population is changing and what the future population will want out of its transportation system.
Very quickly, Sean.
Yeah, so this is kind of like you've got an old, outdated house and you need to rehab the kitchen. We need to retrofit a big part of our transportation system and make it so that it has more choices for people and update some of the old designs and replace some of the bridges. And I think right now the big conversation is where do we get the money to do that? I think a lot of us can come to an agreement on what we'd like to see, but none of it's going to happen unless we can find a way to pay for it.
Money, the big issue. Final thought, Sean?
Yeah, I think the biggest deal is to go back to the one voice as a region, to whether it's just the local here in the Metro East area or just as a state, just to have that one voice and that one message and that one goal to reach, I think, is incredibly important.
Your regional conversation begins tomorrow. That's going to be happening at 7 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum. Anybody invited?
Everybody.
Everybody's invited.
And we played it on nights where the History Museum's exhibits stay open, so you can make a whole night of it and come see the 250.
7 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you all very much. Shay Schindler, thank you for being with us. Sean Light and Brad Reinhart, thank you so much. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Christine Chadwick, the first and only executive director of Focus St. Louis. We'll also meet a young St. Louis man who was hiking the 2,600-mile Pacific Crest Trail. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.